Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Hello again. The Human Technology Podcast is back from the summer break. Most of you will have had their summer vacation, so you're energized, you're back from a holiday maybe, and now you are ready to be back. And a little spoiler, I haven't had a single day off in the summer so far, so I'm more or less on my way to leave for a summer vacation. But I want to return with the podcast, so I'm recording this episode for you as a back from the summer vacation episode. So I used the break in the podcast, I used the time in summer to finalize a report for a client report, which was a very, very nice exercise that I did. This company has a HMI technology that is widely spread, that you can find in every car. And their question is, how can we be future safe? What can we do? And I looked in other areas and competing areas. I looked in the history, into the future. At the end, I created them an innovation roadmap, a technology roadmap, a development roadmap. And I think that they are future safe now. They have a certain focus point. I gave them the priorities, and so they can be future safe with what they have. And if you have a question, if you have something where you believe in your organization, we don't really know where we're going to. We don't really know where the next steps are, where the next focus points are. We don't know where the weak points are in our strategy. Basically, we want to have a North Star. We want to have a moonshot kind of thinking. Give me a call. Don't hesitate to contact me, and we can discuss what I can do for you in this area. And for this episode on the after summer vacation, I decided to make it with three things that happened to me in the past weeks, things that dropped onto my desk, things that I stumbled over. And I'm going to talk about these three totally different things and leave you my thoughts. So it's not a deep analysis, it's not a broad thing I'm here, but three things. And the three things are, first, the IFA in Berlin, the Internationale Funkausstellung, which is an electronics home entertainment exhibition in Berlin that happens, is conducted annually, always in early September. Then, for the first time in my life, I heard the expression Industry 5.0. And never heard about this before. It was a webinar of a future research institute that I was invited to. And they used that expression there and explained it. I thought we are still at 4.0. But it seems like we made one more step, or at least they believe it. And then the third thing is the 15-minute city, a city where you can reach everything you need within 15 minutes. What that is, why I don't believe that this will happen, and how far we have gone with all these other things that I want to discuss. So it's a pretty colorful thing, a colorful episode with these three focus points for this one here. Let's start with the IFA, IFA, as we call it in German. It was called Internationale Funkausstellung, which may be translated to International Radio Exhibition. And I learned that this is not the way they use this acronym IFA. It's called Innovation for All now. Because they found out there is not too much radio technology shown, which is true. And so today it's called Innovation for All. I don't know since how many years they have this. To me, it seems like it is there forever. So it's just like, I don't know, as long as I live, at least 50, 60 years, there's always an IFA every September. So it is a very traditional event and it went through various incarnations. So at the end of the day, yeah, very traditional thing. And I was there in September, and they claim to be the biggest tech event, the biggest tech exhibition of the world. I mean, they have 1,800 global exhibitors, 187 inspiring keynote speakers, more than 215,000 visitors from 138 countries. Yeah, one of these parameters will make it probably the biggest tech exhibition of the world for me. It is still the CES. Beyond all the glamour that Las Vegas is having compared to Berlin, it is, from my point of view, and I'm a little spoiler here, it is not as relevant as the CES. So the CES has more technologies, has more future in it, has more mobility focus points. So the IFA has its role. There are reasons why this one is there. In a direct comparison, the value for me personally or professionally, there's the CES as far bigger. The exhibition grounds in Berlin is not really efficient. It's a mix of very old exhibition halls. They are located around the Funkturm, the radio tower in West Berlin. And then there are a couple of new halls attached to it. So it's a little, it is not really something that works very efficiently. So you have to go upstairs here and downstairs there and then around the corner. And then there's some gap between the locations that you have to bridge in a way. And but it's okay. It's nicely located close to the town center of Berlin. You can go there by public transport. There's an underground station and a train station within walking distance. I have never been there in by car. I think that there will be parking lots somewhere. But in Berlin, it is absolutely safe and easy and efficient to use public transport. So you can do that if you travel there. There were different areas, as you have it in such an electronics exhibition, like a smart home, like white goods, audio, home entertainment, mobility, communication, connectivity, basically smartphones in different ways. Then there was a computing and gaming area. I did not go deeply into this one. Definitely not my kind of interest. Same for photo and video. I just touched that quickly. And health and fitness also maybe worth a visit, but I had a different focus point. So I identified three focus points for me. The first one was the mobility area. There was claimed that there is a lot of mobility, future mobility, that you can see future mobility there at the IFA. If that is future mobility, what they have shown there, if that is anyhow representative, then we will all drive with electric scooters. in the future. That was all they showed. There was about the one hall, one exhibition hall. And so they had these electric scooters to stand on. They had the electric scooters to sit on. And then a few electric motorbikes, and that's it. And guys, this is definitely not the mobility of the future. These devices, they are part of the mobility of the future. No doubt about this. But that is not something that that fulfills all the requirements that we have in future mobility. So, yes, okay, to see all them, to compare them, at the end of the day, they're all pretty similar, all these devices, but at the end of the day, not really the entire picture of future mobility. Second is smart homes. These smart home and white goods area and the home entertainment area, that took up, I don't know, 75% or 70% of the entire exhibition. Huge areas, halls filled with televisions, with kitchens, with refrigerators, with smart home devices, with controllers, and a lot of that. And for me, at the end of the day, the question remains, what is a smart home? And what are specific use cases for this? And how can we realize this one? How can we get into a situation that smart home becomes a reality if we find the right use cases? And of course, if I lie in my bed and I want to lift the shades, the blinds in my living room, and I have some kind of control there and I can do this, all right, so I can see a certain use case in there. But at the end of the day, the even bigger question is, how do we realize this? How do we realize smart homes? And if I build a new house, I can imagine that. I can say, okay, if there's an architect that is interested in that, then he or she can plan this into the building and, yeah, leave all the tubes open and then all the occasions for a for all the wires that you need and all the electronics. I mean, if you install electric shades, suddenly you need an engine somewhere. Suddenly you need maybe some kind of communication. If you want to control it remotely, you need a Bluetooth, you need a Wi-Fi, you may need a cable. And so if you have an existing house and you want to turn this into a smart home, I believe that there is a lot of work to be done. And it's very hard to realize this. So that's the smart home thing. Not really convinced that there is a, let's say, an immediate future fulfilling all the use cases in a broad kind of thing. There are specific situations where this is absolutely perfect, but I can't believe that I will have a smart home in the near future. And the third focus points were solar cells, solar power stations for balconies. It's called Balkonkraftwerke in German, which means balcony power stations. It is, they have about 1 square meter of size, and then you can hang them outside your balcony, and then you can produce your own energy, your own electricity. Again, the question, what is it for? So I couldn't find a reliable information of how much energy does it produce. One statement I heard is, yes, you can run your refrigerator with one of these square meter solar cells if the sun is shining well. And how many do I need then to really cover my entire energy consumption in my house? So I will need a lot of them. And it definitely makes sense if you have a look at the local system. How you hang this one there, and then you can use it to charge your smartphone or to run your refrigerator or do some of these things, and that's okay-ish. If you have a look at the complete systems, I doubt that there is a real advantage in the ecological footprint. I mean, you have to produce these cells, you have to transport them, you have to install them, you have to maintain them. I don't know whether this really makes sense or whether this is just somebody making some money out of this. But since there was a complete haul with all these cells, with all these power stations, I believe that there must be some kind of business behind this. Big question, was it worth going there? Yes, Berlin is always worth going there. Being a Berliner, I have a very special focus on going there. And attending the exhibition, the IFA, yes, definitely worth it. I had a 2 days ticket because I thought, okay, so maybe I need a second day. So I purchased that one up front. 1 day was absolutely sufficient for me. So maybe I missed something. Maybe I didn't get into all the halls. I didn't go into the gaming halls. I didn't go. Didn't take long time in the photo and video halls. I didn't focus on the fitness and health exhibitions. So maybe I missed something. Yeah, but it took me not even a day to go through all the things I was interested in, to talk to the exhibitors, to get the information. And so 1 day, definitely yes. More than that, if you have a specific focus, also very nice. And again, I doubt that this is the biggest tech exhibition in the world. What was nice to be there and worth a visit. Anyway. Second focus point of today, Industry 5.0. The European Union has a definition of Industry 5.0. That's the vision of an industry that goes beyond efficiency and productivity as the sole objectives. It strengthens the role and contribution of industry to society. I don't know what I can do with this definition. I have no idea. So, efficiency and productivity is core in industry. If you in the production places, if you want to produce things, you want to create technology, efficiency and productivity, they are core. And of course, industry is contributing to society. It creates jobs, it creates wealth, it creates products that we want. So the serious impact of industry society, and this is since the late 19th century that we have this one, that there are serious amount of people working in the industry. And they had 3 points what is a little more in detail what describes industry 5.0. It's human-centric, it's sustainable, and it's resilient, which focuses into a certain directions, just like contributing to society, human-centric. At the end, industry is human-centric, and it can be even more human-centric. I mean, you don't need to tell me about what human-centricity is about and how much better we can do in this one. Sustainability, yes, okay. And resilience, that is one of the points that we learned during Corona and now with a trade war between the US and China, that we need to be more resilient. So that describes a little better what it means, but Let's run through the different industries. So the first industrial revolution, Industry 1.0, that was in the late 18th century. That was a mechanical thing. So human labor, human force was replaced using a steam engine. Yep, that was the big innovation that triggered the start of industrialization. So we have these steam engines replacing human power. Also connected with the rail, the trains, the steam trains, the steam locomotives that created mobility and made it easier to transport goods. So that was the initial spark for industry all in all and for Industry 1.0. But 100 years later, at the end of the 19th century, until the mid of the 20th century, there was Industry 2.0, the second industrial revolution. Mass productions, producing goods in lines like Henry Ford had this one, that he rearranged work in a way that it was very focused, one person doing one thing, and then you have this mass production, and you can lower prices, you have far higher outputs, you get much more efficiency when people work in this kind of organization. Yet electricity, the steam engines were replaced by electric engines, which are much cleaner, easier, less maintenance, safer to use. So electricity was a big step forward. And another point feeding into the second industrial revolution, Industry 2.0, is the telecommunication. It was suddenly possible to communicate, to talk to someone that is far away. That made things much, much easier. Instead of sending letters, you could call someone and discuss the things directly. Highly more efficient than writing letters. In the late 1960s until about the beginning of the 21st century, we had the Industry 3.0. Their computers, automation, robots, electronics, basically, were the trigger point for this third industrial revolution, for Industry 3.0. From an HMI point of view, the major change is that suddenly we had a decoupling of the interaction between human and technology on one side, and the action, the activity of the machine, of the robot, the computer, whatever, on the other side. So suddenly it became possible to design HMIs, human-machine interfaces, because before that, you had a function that needed to be performed in a certain location, so somebody needed to jump there, flip a switch, and jump back to somewhere else. Yeah? So this was suddenly not required anymore. Due to the computers, due to the communication between single devices and the automation that we had. Then we had Industry 4.0, came up about 10, 15 years ago. Sorry, came up about 15 years ago. It is also called the Industrial Internet, which describes it very well, what it is. So it is the internet in the industry. Machines talking to machines, networks of machines, internet of things, so different things become part of the internet, communicate, exchange data, and even a certain autonomy of machines is possible, and a certain level of self-learning is possible. So these are the typical Industry 4.0, and this is the latest status that we have. So we have this exchange, we have this human-robot interaction in the industrial internet, and this constant data exchange, and things like predictive maintenance become possible. If a machine finds out, all right, I need some maintenance in the next 2 days, it sends out a message, and then some mechanic comes and does the respective activities to keep it running. This is the new scenario, and this for me was the status that we are in. And by the way, about a year ago, I made an episode about these four different industrial revolutions, 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, and 4.0. So if you want to go back, and I discussed there what impact did it have on the human-machine interfaces, on the relationship between the humans and the machines, and the relationship between technology and society, what did change based on these industrial revolutions. And now it's Industry 5.0. And this is defined as human-robot cooperation. So we have a certain level of intelligence, a certain level of standalone capabilities in robots, so we can cooperate. Cognitive systems, flexibility, fitting, customization. Those are the points that define Industry 5.0 as it was discussed in this webinar that I attended. For me, the question remains, how big is the difference between 4.0 and 5.0 in reality? I believe what is described here as 5.0 is more just like a 4.5 maybe, or a 4.3. It's an update of that one. So for me, it seems like the industry 5.0 is more like a marketing buzzword activity to summarize new activities or to market new activities. Plus the fact that all the other industrial revolutions have lasted years and years. So 1.0, 100 years, 2.0, also almost 100 years, 80 years, and 40 years for 3.0. And so these maybe 10 years seem to be a bit short. Of course, we have this hockey stick development. We have this exponential development of technology. But at the end of the day, I believe that's too early for 5.0. And this is the major point, whether it's too early or not doesn't matter too much, but the difference in thinking between 4.0 and 5.0 is, from my point of view, not big enough to invent 5.0. If you disagree, if I'm missing something, please let me know so we can discuss it. I love to learn from my listeners. Let me know if you believe that Industry 5.0 is a major point. Focus point number three of today's episode, the 15-minute city, which is also something about mobility. So 15-minute city, what is it? It is a city where you can reach everything within 15 minutes. And it is 15 walking minutes. It's not 15 car minutes. It's not 15, maybe 15 bicycle minutes. But it's basically 15 minutes of non-private transport that you can have it. This is basically the definition of it. And how far are we? I see two different ways of realizing that one. The first one is these new artificial mega cities like the Neom or the Line that they create in Saudi Arabia. First question is, will they ever be done? I have no idea whether they get it done. They believe yes. I don't believe it. But yeah, maybe they convinced me of the opposite. And second point is, the second question I'm having is, who wants to live there? Who wants to live in a city that is 170 kilometers long and half a kilometer wide and has something like, I don't know how many levels in that? And it's an artificial glass box somewhere in the middle of nowhere in the desert. And I mean, who wants to live there? Who wants to live in such an artificial environment? Convince me again of the opposite. Let me know if you believe that, yes, of course, there is a serious number of humans that are really into this one. But, and this is the point here, they claim that they have 15-minute cities, that they have something that is, that they create cities in a way that everything you need in your daily life is within 15 minutes. All right, let's wait and see. If it should ever exist, I will travel there. I have a look at this and try to experience that. Beyond going, building completely new cities, a couple of existing cities try to turn themselves into 15-minute cities, which means that they reorganize things, that they make public offices, that they relocate doctors, that they create new structures. Again, I have no idea how far they are with that, and how good it will be at the end, and how well accepted it will be by the people living in that particular city. Now, and this is targeting towards this, the reason why I believe it will not work. Humans are humans, and humans want to be mobile. Humans want to have the freedom of moving around as much as they want to. This is genetically determined. I mean, the Stone Age hunters and collectors, they needed about an hour per day to collect the calories, to hunt or collect the calories that they need to survive. This is deeply inherent in us. So it's part of a genetic setting to be mobile. So the question is, telling people, hey, you sit at home, you do nothing, and we're going to do all the deliveries, and you do not need to move at all, will not really meet the needs. And for me, the question is, if I have a job where I have to be on site, whatever job it is, it's an on-site job. Yeah, I don't want to have the next one, the closest one. I want to have the best. I want to have the one that fits me best, that fits my qualifications, my ideas, that has the right company culture, whatever it is that decides me to make a job. But saying, okay, it must be within 15 minutes is not the main criteria. If it is within 15 minutes, okay, no problem. But if it is 30 minutes by car, if it's 1 hour by car, and it's the perfect job for me, I want to have that. And people will want to have this. So the idea of we're going to have people just not driving to their jobs anymore, maximum 15 minutes, this doesn't work because we will not have the right job within these 15 minutes travel time. Same for restaurants. I just don't want to go to the hamburger place around the corner. If I want to have a five-star meal, I want to have a five-star meal. And if I have to travel 1 hour or 2 hours to get to the restaurant, I will do this. Because I want to have exactly the restaurant that fits my taste and my expectations, my ideas best. Same, for example, for doctors. I want to have the one that fits me best and the one that resonates with me, that has the right way of communication. So, I mean, my doctor, my main doctor, is 10 walking minutes away, so that would fit it. But if he moves to some other place and I will have to drive half an hour to get him, I will do this because I like this guy and I trust this guy and I believe that he's doing the right things. He's having the right approach to me. Yeah, and so those are the reasons why I believe that this 15-minute city is a nice paradigm, a nice theory, but I don't think it will work out completely. All right, so that's it for today. That's the Back from Summer Vacation edition episode of the Human Technology Podcast. So it was about the IFA, the Innovation for All Electronics Exhibition in Berlin. I talked about my ideas on Industry 5.0 and my ideas of the 15-minute city. This one will come out on October 3rd, which is the national holiday in Germany. But I will put it out to return to the old bi-weekly, bi-weekly rhythm of podcasts. This is the English version. It will come out on October 4th. So the German version on October 3rd on the national holiday and this one on October 4th. And from now on, back to the bi-weekly rhythm. And stay tuned and recommend this podcast to your friends and colleagues.
That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast@beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.